is the producer of this segment on Fela. And stay tuned for Back of the Book, which comes up like in a couple of seconds. 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It's 5 a.m. and time for Back of the Book.
Yeah, yeah, Ronnie. Gaga Google, yes, Gaga Google. Where is it?
It's Matthew. How you doing, yes, sir?
Hi, this is Tony Roberts, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
Do you think this war will ever end?
I don't know. They'll just have another one.
I want to get out of here. Don't you?
Not that much.
So you like it here?
It's not that bad.
You're in a foxhole! What a war engine outside!
This is great news, Uncle Sid.
That's why I'm out here. Sure, glad I've got my WBAI.
You should be ashamed. But when the comes out, they say how much they lost.
Be glad you've got your WBAI. Become a member online at WBAI.org. Now, do it now.
By Malcolm X, Iron Man, Happy Hoffman, Michael Mann, Buck Lee Jr., the Malcolm X folks in the same room at the same time. Of the Thieves, Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top of the line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I suspect that it is a rainy 5 a.m. and you're listening to all. The world sure is a sad place these days. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things on this program, and you can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest back of the book program links. Click on that and you'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. This is our 152nd pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story of the past week in several different local galaxy groups is... We have rocketed up to the gigantic number of 123 followers on Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week. Yes, we got a couple of more people suddenly showed up this week. I don't know why, but who knows? They may bail out in the next couple of days anyway. Who knows what's going on up on Twitter X? The next WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Monday, October 30th, but it will be a closed meeting to discuss and evaluate WBAI management personnel. That's what it says in the official notice of the meeting. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security, and that November meeting will be the last meeting of the 12th WBAI local station board. As we said last week, the election is over for people to be on that local station board. Those election results are in now. They got in kind of late, but they got in. People who've been elected in this election are supposed to take seats in December. And December will start the 13th WBAI local station board. It will be interesting. The bad guys made some gains, and that could do damage to WBAI. I suppose we'll see what happens. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website, which we call the CDC anyway, we leave off the rest of it, isn't giving us all that much information about COVID-19 in America, although they're saying that total deaths in America are at 1,147,253, which means that 1,295 people have died of COVID-19 since our last program a week ago. That's a little bit less than the previous week's total. I may get my autumn booster this coming week. Woohoo! The pandemic is clearly not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We're getting or have gotten our new shots. We don't want to get COVID-19.
Well, I, Pickles, have decided to read a couple of poems to our dear listeners. One is kind of political, given the chaos that is happening in the United States these days with the federal government. And the other one is Halloween-themed because we are in the month of October, which is one of my favorite months and favorite times of year, usually. So the first poem is entitled Waiting for the Barbarians by Constantine Cavafy, translated by E. Keeley and P. Sherard. Waiting for the Barbarians. What are we waiting for, assembled in the forum? The barbarians are due here today. Why isn't anything going on in the Senate? Why are the senators sitting there without legislating? Because the barbarians are coming today. What's the point of senators making laws now? Once the barbarians are here, they'll do the legislating. Why did our emperor get up so early, and why is he sitting enthroned at the city's main gate, in state,
wearing the crown. Because the barbarians are coming today, and the emperor's waiting to receive their leader. He's even got a scroll to give him, loaded with titles, with imposing names. Why have our two consuls and praetors come out today, wearing their embroidered, their scarlet togas? Why have they put on bracelets with so many amethysts, rings sparkling with magnificent emeralds? Why are they carrying the elegant canes beautifully worked in silver and gold? Because the barbarians are coming today, and things like that dazzle the barbarians. Why don't our distinguished orators turn up as usual to make their speeches, say what they have to say? Because the barbarians are coming today, and they're bored by rhetoric and public speaking. Why this sudden bewilderment, this confusion? How serious people's faces have become. Why are the streets and squares emptying so rapidly, everyone going home lost in thought? Because night has fallen and the barbarians haven't come. And some of our men just in from the border say there are no barbarians any longer. Now what's going to happen to us without barbarians? Those people were a kind of solution. And that was Waiting for the Barbarians. By Constantine Cavafy.
Yeah, I remember him. He was he got to be a sort of big deal in the gay community. He was gone, of course. He was a big deal. His poetry was a big deal. The translation of his poetry into English was a big deal about 50 years ago because he was a gay poet. And he wrote some very gay poems, as I recall. I used to read those things and say, yeah, this guy's doing this stuff. Okay.
Wow, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's great. That was a great choice then. The next poem comes from the Golden Book's Treasury of Elves and Fairies. Remember those Golden Books when you were a child?
I do. I mean, my mother used to read those to me. She liked them because they were substantial. The covers were pretty substantial. They weren't just paper like a comic book. And she said, yes, that will last, because she had a little kid she was reading to. And I would, you know, want to look at it and go look at it again after she was done reading it, look at the pictures, cause couldn't read it. And, you know, you could be a little bit rough on one of the books sometimes. But a golden book, a little golden book, would stand up to all that toddler
mayhem.
Okay.
Well, this little golden book is not so little, because this is really the classroom size. If you were going to sit, the teacher was going to sit in front of the class and turn the book around, read it to the kids. But I think I got it on sale many years ago, and it's like, yay, oh boy, lots of elves and fairies. And we're going to read a poem. Yes, class, we're going to read a poem called Halloween Song by Marjorie Barrows. Three little witches pranced in the garden. Three little witches danced from the moon. One wore a wishing hat. One held a pussycat. One went a pitty-pat and whispered a tune. Out flew an owl who glared at the kitten. Out flew an owl who stared at the rest. Dancing with haughty nose, each on the other's toes, down past the pumpkin rose under his nest. Three little witches blew on their broomsticks. Three little witches flew to their queen. Over the windy glen into the night. But then they will be back again next Halloween. That was Halloween Song by Marjorie Barrows.
Well, thank you, Pickles of the North. We've been talking about the rainy weather for the past few programs. And it's happening again. If you're listening to this program over the air on Saturday morning, then you're probably seeing rain out the window. I think it's not the series of gully washers that we'd had the previous couple of weekends, but it's going to be some hard rain here and there. Yeah, this may be the new normal for this time of year for Greater New York. We were wondering about it, and it's just keeps happening. And it's happening in every 7 days, about. And there are, somehow, weekly cycles that show up in all sorts of things. And you wouldn't think that that happens, but it's kind of natural. And so, yeah, we've got this weekly thing going on where the weekend just gets very, very rainy. Not just a bit of rain, but you get a downpour. And these are not going to be as bad as the previous couple, but it's here again. We're going to get some hard rain. And on TV, they pointed out the last time we had a weekend around this area that was free of rain was September 2nd and 3rd. Oh, man. So, oh, well, it may not be a climate thing, but it may be a climate thing. You can't tell. That's the thing about climate change. Just standing there, you can't say, is this the climate changing or is this just a one-off weather thing? It's, I don't know. Anyway, the last time I said it was raining for the start of the program, and turns out it wasn't. The rain came a bit later, but I think it may be happening this time. This is based on weather predictions on TV, so I'm not guaranteeing it, but you may have to batten down some hatches a little bit more. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. She is radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. In the past, I've mentioned several times something called the Carrington Event. The Carrington Event occurred in the first 2 days of September 1859. That was when people saw the Aurora Borealis extending down to Florida and beyond, and telegraphers got shocks from their telegraph keys, and some were even able to operate the telegraphs without turning the power on. The power in those days consisted of large buckets, basically glass buckets usually, and they had acid in them, and they had a chunk of metal. It's a way of making direct current electricity. You make a cell, actually, out of one of those. You put a couple of those in series together, and you get a higher voltage, and then you can send a signal down the line. And that's what they did in those days. And it had only been about 15 years since Samuel F.B. Morse had invented the electric telegraph, the really good one. Some other people had invented different types of electrical telegraphs before that. They stank. And eventually Morse's telegraphy took over. But in 1859, the Morse telegraph was only 15 years old, and the others were only, maybe 10 years or so older than Morse's telegraph, and they were in Europe. And so, yeah, people said, what the hell is this? And they got zapped a bit. And in early September 1859, English amateur astronomers Richard Carrington and Richard Hodgson each recorded on his own the first observations of a solar flare. Their reports were published side by side in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, and they each showed off their drawings of the event at the November 1859 meeting of the Royal Astronomical Society. So by doing this, we have a definite record of the event from people who are really observing things. So we know the sun was doing weird stuff enough that these two amateurs could speak to the professionals in England about it and show off their drawings, because who had an ability to photograph the sun in those days? Photography was in its infancy, and it wouldn't have worked. Much later on, it was understood that what they had seen and what had hit the Earth was a coronal mass ejection. That was what the Carrington event was about. And most people in 1859 would hardly have noticed it, and only the telegraphers had had any actual interference in their lives from the coronal mass ejection. Today, of course, it would be a big mess. What happens with a coronal mass ejection is you have solar flares, and they basically what happens is a chunk of the sun goes flying out a bit, but it, with a flare, it usually goes back in, although it sends out a bit of radiation there, electromagnetic radiation as well as ionizing, of course. But that's how the flare works. But with a coronal mass ejection, you get a whole bunch. It's sort of a gigantic flare. You get a whole bunch of material from the sun that gets taken out and ballooned out. And this has to do with the magnetic fields, the extremely powerful magnetic fields on the sun. And these blow out the material of the sun. And so what you have is a whole lot of charged particles. A great many protons are in it. And they come flying off the sun. And if you happen to be on a planet that's in the way of that thing, it hits you and, oh, it causes noticeable events. And I'll note that a solar flare, which is smaller, a smaller event than a coronal mass ejection, killed the Quebec power grid in 1989. It's a whammo, because what happened was the way electricity works is if a magnetic field crosses a conductor of electricity, electricity is produced, current flows. And there was enough power in the magnetic field that came with the particles that it crossed over the long lines, the current, the electrical power lines that are strung between those big towers, and it crossed across that and generated electricity. Now, these things were already carrying a lot of electricity, but this hit them with more electricity than they could possibly handle, and it blew out the entire Quebec electrical grid in 1989. That was just a flare that happened to get them. Well, researchers have recently identified what appears to be the largest coronal mass ejection to hit Earth, at least that we can discover. It was estimated to be 10 times the size of the Carrington event. It occurred about 14,300 years ago, so no electrical activities of humans were affected, because nobody had any electricity yet. Edouard Bard, lead author of this study, said, quote, "It's clear that if one of these events occurred today, this would be quite destructive on our energy network and also internet network. This would really freeze. In fact, all communications and travel would be totally disrupted," unquote. Yeah, the Carrington event would have a giant effect, but something 10 times bigger than the Carrington event, wow, all the satellites would probably die. Every satellite around would die. The people on the International Space Station, they would be in deep trouble, because there might be one. All of their electrical systems would just be fried. It would be like an electromagnetic pulse from a nuclear weapon. And they also might be subjected to so much radiation that it could have a very bad effect on their health. So, and of course, everything electrical goes down. Even your radio that you're listening to WBAI on right now, that would get fried. One of the big things is that we depend on semiconductor electronics these days. Semiconductor electronics are very vulnerable to electricity that's overvoltaged and not coming where it's supposed to come. For instance, in a lot of very packed-in chips, as they call them, integrated circuits, what happens is, and I say very packed-in, some integrated circuits are denser than others. Like in your computer, you have, people call them chips. I don't like it, but everybody calls it a chip. You have the chips, and they control things in a computer, and they are very packed in. And the central processing unit is amazingly miniaturized. Everything is microscopic. It has all these microscopic semiconductors and transistors and diodes in it. And they are very vulnerable to static electricity. In fact, it has been shown that if you have something like a very dense chip and you just pass a styrofoam cup over it at about, oh, an inch or so, you can then look at it and see the craters that have been blasted into the surface of the semiconductors, and they don't work after that. So, yeah, so we would really get blasted by that. And not only – we wouldn't be able to replace stuff, because a lot of the stuff that is not hooked up to anything, a lot of that would get hurt too, because it would suddenly get a lot of voltage on it. And at 10 times, I don't know, it's possible people might feel that. Remember, whatever they were that were grown on a Star Trek episode referred to humans, we are ugly bags of mostly water. It's mostly salt water, and salt water will conduct. And oh, man. So, yeah, it's possible people would feel something like that. So maybe 14,300 years ago, people felt something, said, what the hell was that? We'll never know. The evidence of this big event was found in traces of unusual solar activity in ancient tree rings in the French Alps and ice cores in Greenland. The physical evidence, a spike in carbon-14 in the trees. Basically what happens with carbon-14, energy hits nitrogen in the upper atmosphere, and it goes from being nitrogen to being carbon-14. Most of the carbon that we're made of and everything is carbon-12. And carbon-14 is a way of dating things, because carbon-14 is slightly radioactive and it decays over time. And it basically, you can see how old something is in some cases. You can't do radiocarbon dating on past about 48,000 years, because there's too little of it left after 48,000 years to really assess how much of it is gone. But that's the way that works. So they have carbon-14 in these trees, and that's what they were able to measure there. And as for the Greenland ice cores, the energy from the event also created beryllium-10 isotopes. That's another unusual isotope that shows up in the ice cores. And the researchers found that the radiocarbon levels stayed elevated for about a century after that, 14,300 years ago, because the sun went quiet after that big event. And the sun's magnetic field weakened a lot, and cosmic rays were hitting the upper atmosphere of the Earth with more power. You see, the sun helps to shield the Earth from cosmic rays because it has a very powerful magnetic field. In fact, you and I are in the magnetic field of the sun right now. We're obviously in the magnetic field of the Earth, but we're also in the magnetic field of the sun. And because the cosmic rays are coming, they're frequently charged because they're coming from far away. Even though the magnetic field of the sun isn't that powerful out there, they have a very long time to keep going through it, and it has an effect on them. So there is an overabundance of carbon-14 in those trees that they examined. They're dead trees. They're like, you know, up in the Alps, probably in ice or something. And so that there's an overabundance of it. And they said, wow, look at that. And they could date it very easily. So, oh boy, cosmic rays were hitting the Earth more for about 100 years after that happened. So it was a big blowout. The sun lost a lot of energy and sort of slowed down a bit. That event, 14,300 years ago, is only one of 9 extreme coronal mass ejections to occur in the last 15,000 years. And these things are called Miyake events, after Japanese physicist Fusa Miyake, who first discovered the radiocarbon spikes in tree rings in 2012. So Wowee, 14,300 years ago, the Earth got hit with something 10 times bigger than the Carrington event. It could still happen. They're saying these things happen maybe once every 1,000 years. Well, let's hope we're not going to get one of those anytime soon. And we have a program note. We are preempted next week for another fundraising special. And also next week, some other programs, two entire days are going to be preempted because we got to pay some bills and we got to get on the air and beg you for money. So we are preempted for our usual thing. If you go up to my website at glib.com and look at the back of the book page, you will see our schedule as far as we know it, and you'll see that we're preempted. So that's what's going on there. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. The amazingly stupid hijinks of the House of Representatives continues. Maybe the House of Republicans is what we should call it, and it could be a clown car. Yes, we could roll the Capitol around the country, and it'll be a very small Capitol building, and we'll roll it around the country, and they'll get somewhere, and a whole bunch of Republicans and clown faces will come pouring out of it. They'll get like 200 of them pouring out of this little model of the Capitol, and they'll toot whistles, they'll throw pies in each other's faces, and we'll say, this is how America is governing itself. Or not. Anyway, so the silliness there continues. They ousted McCarthy, and then they had fights about whom they'll plug in as Speaker of the House. So they had the internal contest for who would get nominated. Because you have to be nominated, and you know, you got to know who to vote for whom to vote. And so they had their big conference, and oh man, that right-wing creep Jim Jordan was running, and the other right-wing creep Steve Scalise was running, and he's not as visible as Jordan. But he may not be quite as awful, but he's only a shade less awful than Jordan is, because Scalise has done some really crappy stuff over the years. And at the end of this big caucus with all the Republicans for who will get nominated, Scalise won. He became the nominee. But then they had a vote for Speaker of the House. And Scalise couldn't get the 217 votes that he needed to win the Speaker of the House race. And there were enough Republican Congress critters who totally opposed him that he had no hope of getting those 217 votes. So Scalise just quit the race entirely rather than keeping on trying as McCarthy had done in January. You remember, McCarthy in January was just pandering to those 20 right-wing jackasses and gave them all sorts of concessions, including making it very easy for them to fire him, and which they did because he went and said, all right, let's keep the government going for another 6 weeks. Oh, that's big crime. And so, yeah, they had this whole thing. I guess he just didn't have the belly for it, Scalise, and he's not gonna do the compromising that McCarthy did, and he's not gonna just keep going and grinding away. So to hell with it, he said. So they waited one day, and now this Jordan guy is back trying for the job. and there's a question of whether or not he could get 217 of the 221 Republican House members to vote for him. The 20 far right-wing Republicans will vote for him, we know that, but some other Republicans may find him to be a bit too much. This could go on for quite a while. On top of which, who knows if something's going to happen with George Santos. He's one of the Republicans. He was also a never Scalise guy because he threw a hissy fit because Scalise didn't call him up to solicit his vote directly. So right there, Scalise could only afford to lose 4 votes. Same for any Republican voting. There are only 221 Republicans. They need 217 votes. And if they lose 5 of them, they only get 216 votes. Whoops. Not enough. So, yeah, you have this strange thing happening here. And I say it could take a while. McCarthy took 15 votes on the House floor to get elected. The same 20 far right-wing Republicans, including Jordan, are the ones causing all the delays. The business of the government is not getting done. And by law, all bills that involve spending money must come from the House. And spending money is a big thing in Congress. It's one of the main things they do. How do we spend this money? How do we fund something? The stopgap spending bill that got passed recently and got McCarthy removed runs out in November, and if there's no Speaker of the House, it's hard to see how anything could get done before then. So we have a big crisis in the government because some jerks want to strut around. That's what this is about, strutting around. Representative Michael McCaul, Republican of Texas, chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, said that the divided Republican caucus was, quote, playing with fire, unquote, by not electing someone to the speakership soon. He said, quote, I see a lot of threats out there, but one of the biggest threats I see is that room, unquote, meaning the 20 Republicans who really do want to shut down the government. Well, I wonder if he'll not vote for Jordan. I think it would be bad if Jordan became Speaker. And it's very unfortunate that we have this situation like this. If we could only get some of the Republicans to say, I'm going to vote for the Democrats, and then Jeffries could end up becoming Speaker of the House. He won't make concessions to the 20 nuts. And we could go on for a while till the next election and hope things work out. However, I don't know that the Republicans are able to step up to that because they'd be ostracized and those 20 would be after them all day and they'd campaign against them. And some of the far right-wing billionaires who fund all this stuff would mount gigantic campaigns against them. I don't see how the hell we're getting out of this nonsense. Of course, last Saturday, the big event happened. Hamas invaded parts of Israel, and they came charging in, and their targets were the Israeli people, the citizens, just people. So they charge into the kibbutzes, and they go into a village, and they went to house, and they killed everybody they could find in most of those houses. Some people they took as hostages. They also came flying in paragliders, into the a music festival that was going on. Ironically, I think the music festival might have been, you know, a peace festival or something. And they went in there, and they just took their automatic weapons and opened up on the crowds. You get a whole crowd. Talk about fish in a barrel. Whole crowds there. And then as people tried to get out in cars, as they came out, they had Hamas guys waiting at the exit. And it was a choke point, a classic choke point. And so they shot them in the cars. And now the cars become blockages for the other cars. And so you're racing away from guys with guns, and then you can't go anymore, and there are guys with guns waiting for you, and they shoot you in the car. 260 people were killed at that particular event. So, geez, you know, I gotta say, Hamas, they planned this thing for a long time. I think they said they planned it for more than a year. So they did a lot of planning, and they figured out how to get through the fences and barriers, which parts to hit, how to get a little ways in so that the people, that big bunch of people, those fish in a barrel at the Peace Music Festival, that they could get to them without them running away ahead of time. They did all this planning and figured all of this out. And would they do all of that planning and then say, well, we got to the point of killing all of those civilians, and then they just stopped planning? I don't know. That doesn't sound logical, does it? They had to know that they'd trigger this kind of response from Israel. So you have to think maybe what's happening now with Israel just going crazy on them. This may be what they wanted. This may be their goal. They may still be celebrating, saying, yay, they're bombing the hell out of us, and it makes Israel look bad. Ugh. Yeah, Hamas is, after this, I consider Hamas to have joined an exclusive club of organizations. I have previously said that I endorse the extermination of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban. Now I put Hamas in there with them. Exterminate all those people. They're no damned good. Kill them off the face of the earth. That's what they should do. However, as it turns out, that's not so easy. For Hamas, really difficult to make a surgical strike on them. It would have to be a very, very surgical strike. It's not as if they have a compound you can blow up. They have their people in among other Palestinians on the Gaza Strip. They're just all living in there. And it's a very crowded place, as we all know now. And they have their headquarters and their bases of operation in neighborhoods. And that's why they launch rockets at Israel from neighborhoods. They launch the rockets, and then they run away, knowing that the Israelis are going to go after where the rockets came from and blow stuff up. And so, and they send so many rockets out that the Israelis can get there while some of the rockets are still there and being shot out. So, of course, the Israelis bomb the rocket site and people are living there. Hamas is a terrible bunch. And, you know, how do you even talk about this? And, you know, this whole thing helps Netanyahu a lot. Tremendously. He was having all these demos in the streets against him. He's going to be indicted. I think he's been indicted, and they want to lock him up, and there's all sorts of opposition to Netanyahu. Well, there are no demos against him now. Hamas has succeeded in uniting Israelis who were very, very not united before. They were at odds with each other. They wanted to get rid of Netanyahu. Netanyahu is the prime minister. They have a parliamentary system over there, not like ours, where we elect a president from the entire United States. Yeah, we have flaws with that, too, in terms of this stupid electoral college. A compromise made some 200-odd years ago, which really isn't working out anymore. But anyway, what they do is they have people elected in little places. So there's like a congressional district equivalent that Netanyahu gets elected from, and they're all his pals, and they're not going to vote against him. So it takes a lot to bounce out one of these guys. So most of Israel is against Netanyahu. and then this happens. And how can they not be united after this? Hamas has united people who've been fighting with each other for years. Speaking of fighting for years, this has been a war that's been going on for decades and decades. And, you know, it had been going on and it was bad. You know, you had Yasser Arafat doing things years ago, and it was nothing like this crap. This crap was far worse. I mean, I'm seeing various leftoids, people who generally say, the revolution is coming and I'm the left. And they reflexively are, you know, going with anybody who says anything against Israel. And some of them are coming up with, oh, it's all lies. They didn't kill children. You know, they didn't cut their heads off. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. But they certainly killed children. They killed a whole lot. When you line a whole family up and shoot everybody or burn their house with them in it, you're killing whoever's in there. And if there are children in there, they're killed too. So we know that they did kill children. Trying to split hairs about, oh, they didn't do it in quite as barbaric a way as some people are saying, and then trying to use that to say, oh, and it wasn't, it was okay, basically, which is what people are saying. This is very bad stuff. And, oh, man, you know, you also have things like Hamas saying, yes, stop bombing people in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip. Stop bombing them. We want peace. At the same time, they're launching rockets into Israel to hit Israeli civilians. Huh, you can't negotiate with people like that. All you can do is kill them. It's a war. War is always the same. And it's bad. And, you know, both sides are killing the other side's civilians mostly. And this is something, this is war. This is how it goes. In World War II, the Germans were bombing cities. They threatened to destroy Rotterdam, and they got away with that. And then they went after England and they bombed the cities of England, especially London, in the well-known Blitz, as it's called. And they bombed those cities and they perfected the art of firebombing cities. They did things like wait until it was low tide. And I think the moon phase was right. And they would go over and bomb London. And because what they would do is they would drop heavy bombs to destroy the water pipes underground, and they would bomb them and drop incendiary bombs to get the houses to burn. And so it was a two-step thing. You drop a bomb to destroy the water supply, then you drop the incendiaries, and they can't get water out of the fire hydrants. And because it's low tide, they can't go to the expedient of throwing the water hoses into the River Thames and pumping water out of there. So you really maximize your damage. Well, shortly after that, the Brits said, oh, okay. You know, people had said prior to this, you can't bomb civilians. That's against the rules of law. Germans did it. Well, the British said, you did that to us. We're going to do that to you. So when they were able to, they used the same tactics. They came up with bomb loads for their specific bombers that consisted of one big blockbuster bomb. That it's called a blockbuster because when it fell, it would blow up an entire city block. And that would destroy the German pipes underground. And then they had thousands of relatively small bomblets that would come down, and they were incendiaries, and they lit them up. And you can still see the pictures online of various German cities that are absolutely burned out. And this is what happens when you do it to somebody, they do it to you. And if Churchill and them hadn't bombed the Germans that way, they would have thrown Churchill out because the population of Great Britain wanted to hit back hard. It's the thing of, we've suffered, now you're going to suffer. And this is going back and forth like this. And now Hamas has upped the ante on this thing. And of course they knew that this was going to happen. They planned this. And somebody referred to Hamas as a death cult. And they're sort of right. These guys want to be martyrs. They want to get those 72 virgins. God, what an ambition. And, you know, this is totally insane. And last Saturday morning is sort of going to rank up there, I think, maybe, with Nanking, 1937, referred to as the Rape of Nanking. And they also, they raped women, and you know, they just murdered loads of people and then took the hostages. And how do you get the hostages out? I don't know that there's any way to do that. The Israelis are bombing the whole thing. They're going to kill some of the hostages, and there's absolutely no way around that. And the Hamas creeps are posting videos of what they've done. They're so proud of it. I'll note that the Japanese, when they attacked Nanking in that horrible way in 1937, they filmed a lot of it themselves. And that was used in war crime trials after that. And Hamas has people posting online, oh, here we are killing all these people. Look at the dead people that we killed here. And, oh, man. And then the former chief of Hamas says, everybody come out on Saturday for big demos. And, you know, he says this will, you know, against Israel and all of this. Anybody going to these things should think about the idea that, do you want to be considered someone who endorses what was done on October 7th? Because I know most of those people going to the demos are not endorsing that. But it sure as hell looks like you are, because you're going there to a demo called by Hamas, who did all of this. And Hamas is certainly going to spin it that way. There's no way they will not do that. So this is a big mess. It's terrible. And, you know, it's sort of like said, all we have done is awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve. So there you go. We've got this. None of this can be undone. Israel is, of course, just going insane. And nobody's doing anything wonderful here. But hey, somebody went and decided they wanted this. This is part of the Hamas plan. Again, if you're a death cult, it probably makes sense.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Oh, my, we're coming in late. It's the pitching train. The pitching train is coming a little late today. Oh, boy. All right. Please, please support WBAI. Yes, we have all sorts of different opinions here on WBAI, and I'm sure that my opinion that I've just expressed is not what the opinion is of some other WBAI people, because management is posting some of what some other BAI people is. They've sent that out to the rest of the staff, and oh, boy. So, if you support free speech and being able to have more than one way of looking at things, please support BAI and this program by calling 1-212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. When they pick up at the call center, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. If you want to make a one-time donation, you may do that. 1-212-209-2950. And give us a call. Give them a call. Give the call center a call at that number right now if you can. We need to raise money to support the station, keep it on the air. And if you value people having more than one opinion, there not being a total absolute monoculture of opinion on BAI, you can support that idea by pledging to this program right now, calling 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, or tell them you want to make a one-time donation. 1-212-209-2950. We hope you'll give a call now. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next is...
Everything Old is New Again, Again with Dave Kenny.
Okay, keep dry, try to survive all the psychic bad stuff that's going on. And above all, remember what that feeling so sad Dormouse said.
$0.33 a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that 33 cents a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as 33 cents a day. $10 a month. You can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card and other goodies. Sign up online. Go to WBAI.org and click on donate. All the details are right there. The WBAI buddy. Be one today.
Hello. Wagwan. Sac passe. Bueno. WBAI will be at the Flatbush Frolic on Sunday, October 15th from 11 a.m. to 6. Pass by and see what's good. Catch some fun at the fair on Cotillia Road from Ocean to Coney Island Avenues. Many things are free, some are not. That's Cotillia Road from Ocean to Coney Island Avenues for music, arts, food, pony rides, and more. Meet friends, make friends. That's the Flatbush Frolic, Sunday, October 15th, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Good day, everyone. The next WBAI Advisory Board meeting will be held on Sunday, October 15th at 1 p.m. The meeting will be held by teleconference. The call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number is 641-711. Everyone is welcome to call in and join the meeting. Once again, the call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number is 641-711. It's just another way to show your support for this great station. Thank you.
WBAI accepts snowmobiles. If you have a snowmobile, we want it. We also want any extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
Hey, remember me?
Yeah, you do that announcement.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's the station identification. I need to do it again.
Well, hold on. How about I do it?
Okay. Yeah,
So, it's, you turned to...
Tuned to.
Yeah, you tuned to
radio station.
Radio station, WB, what is it?
AI.